The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. If you're missing Mr. Flurry, don't worry. Wait around just another 30 minutes and you'll hear from him. We'll be playing his Trumpet Daily video that will air this weekend on the subject of Brexit. It'll air, as I said, this weekend if all goes well. It's not online yet, so you can get an advanced preview of this program. Right, well, not quite right now, but in 30 minutes. It could be a pretty exciting program. We'll have something giving God's perspective on what really is the most talked about piece of news all year over here in the UK. And that will be going out, again, if all goes well, just days ahead of the referendum. That program will be offering a He Was Right book that's consistently one of our top requested books. So personally, I have high hopes for this weekend. Maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but I'd like to hope that we would break 300 requests over the weekend. It would be great if we did. So that program is certainly something all our regular listeners can be praying about. Thank you for your comments on Twitter and emails about the Trumpet Daily Radio. Mr. Flurry forwarded me this morning one email from one of our listeners sent to our email address, td@kpcg.fm. It was a recipe for cheesy Brussels sprouts after I commented that I hated Brussels sprouts yesterday. So someday I may work up the courage to try that recipe. I have no idea if Mr. Flurry listened to the program yesterday. I don't know what his internet connection and things are like over in Austria. If he didn't, I'm not sure what he would have made of somebody sending a recipe for cheesy Brussels sprouts into the Trumpet Daily. Maybe he is wondering what on earth I've been talking to all of you about over the last few days. But he still let me on today. Now, we've learned a bit more about the tragic shootings in Orlando. It's looking like the shooter, Omar Martin, he might have been a homosexual. It looks like he frequented that nightclub that he attacked. He was signed up with some homosexual dating apps. I guess all that could have been some kind of pre-operational surveillance, but it seems unlikely, especially with the apps there. There are also some early signs that Omar Martin might have been more directly connected to the Islamic State than was reported yesterday. Rukmini Kalamichi, she's an Islamic terrorist expert for the New York Times, and she made some good points about this. She wrote, "There are several elements of the Orlando siege that recall operational tactics used in recent months by top ISIS cadres." So, for example, witnesses overheard Omar Martin telephoning someone and demanding that America stop airstrikes in Syria. And that was identical with the Paris attacks. They called the police from inside the Bataclan, demanding that France stop bombing or stop airstrikes in Syria. And then just the way that these attacks were carried out. You know, a man taking hostages in a crowded location, armed with a gun, and then demanding an end to airstrikes. It's all very similar to the Paris attacks. So it may be more than just one guy acting completely alone and then the Islamic State claiming the attacks. There are signs that both Paris and Orlando may have been then coordinated by the same central authority. Again, early days yet in terms of this part of the investigation. But if that is the case, it does certainly imply perhaps a larger reach or scope of operations for the Islamic State. And then this terrorism expert for the New York Times, she also wrote, "The attack was not commanded per se by ISIS, but ISIS played a role in nudging the attacker and helping him shape the plan / choose targets." She said, "I feel somewhat uncomfortable calling Orlando shooter a lone wolf, but I'm continuing to do so because I don't know a better term." So it looked like he may have been, at least to a certain extent, working with the Islamic State hierarchy. Now, The Observer, they had a good article. I think it was published earlier. I didn't see it until today. On the terrorist attacks, along similar lines to what we talked about yesterday. I'll share just a few quotes with you from that. That was called Jihad Denial Kills Again. And the quip was, America just suffered our worst terrorist attack since 9/11. We need to start talking honestly about the enemy that keeps butchering Americans. And it talked about the way that the killer's family had said that their son's acts had nothing to do with religion. But then they also write that Omar Martin's father, he had publicly praised the Taliban. So he was being brought up in this environment that was praising these religious extremists, these Islamists, praising the Taliban, these enemies of America. The article went on to make similar points to the ones that we made yesterday about Mr. Obama's speech after the shooting, where he just refused to mention Islam. And they write, Mr. Obama's denial of the obvious, perfected during his two terms of the White House, appears unshakable. And it continues, these evasions are met with derision by counterterrorism professionals who deduced Mr. Obama's agenda back in 2009 when he dismissed the Fort Hood massacre as workplace violence. Spies and cops have gotten used to this president's persistent inability to call the enemy what he actually is, even though the enemy constantly calls himself such things. What was he going to call Orlando, an old FBI friend, just hours after the Paris attack? Gay place violence? And it talked about how, this article went on to talk about how France responded to the Bataclan massacre, talking about pledging a merciless response to terrorism. And they concluded, they wrote a bit about that and wrote, Paris means business, finally. But then this article concludes, in the aftermath of our own Bataclan, President Obama has offered his usual platitudes about hate and guns. This is escapism as counterterrorism policy. America must demand better, including a reality-based assessment of our terrorism threat from our next commander-in-chief. If we cannot name our enemy, we are already halfway to losing the war. And he's right. And if you want more on that subject, go online and listen to yesterday's program where we talk about how just too many of America's elite refuse to even talk about Islam here, about how any discussion of even the shooter's religion is being minimized or shut down. And America cannot win this war if it won't even talk about the enemy, let alone confront the enemy. But if even talk about the enemy is shut down, and it's just amazing to me how much worse this has gotten in the wake of 9/11. You just thought, after all those years, as these attacks continue, I mean, I guess we haven't had anything anywhere close to as bad as 9/11 since then, but there's certainly been a steady stream of Islamic attacks in the Western world. You'd have thought we would be starting to wake up, and instead we're moving in the opposite direction, getting more and further asleep, to the point now where we don't even want to talk about the shooter's religion. We're becoming less open in addressing this problem, not more. And of course, there was another terrorist attack in France, another attack claimed by Islamic State. A fighter killed two police officers, a man and a woman, a couple, it looks like, both in the police, who both lived together, and he killed them in front of their three-year-old, who did survive this attack. So it's a horrible and a violent world that we live in. It's a world filled with fear. And that brings me to the main subject I want to discuss today, at least in this first half, before we go to Mr. Flurry's Brexit program, and that is the rising fear in Europe. Europe is very slowly turning an important corner. Yesterday, the NATO Secretary General, Jens Stoltenberg, he drew attention to the way Europe is now starting to spend more on its military. I remember for years and years and years, decades even, Europe has been cutting its defence spending. Looking at Europe and Canadian military spending lumped together, as they both tend to be lower than the US and have both been trending in the same direction, European and Canadian military spending within NATO, that dropped by about 2.5% in 2010, 2011 and 2012. The rate of decrease in spending slowed in 2013 and 2014, but they were still cutting spending. It was still going down. Now, NATO just released their final assessment of spending in 2015, and they concluded that it rose. So after all those years of decline, it rose. Now it rose by 0.6%. That's not a huge amount, but it turned a corner. It turned around. Europe is not cutting its military anymore. NATO also, they released their estimates for 2016, and that estimates that military spending will rise by 1.5%. So not only is military spending in Europe rising, and military spending for NATO countries within Europe and also Canada, so not only is that spending rising, but it's rising more this year than it did last year. So that rate of increase is increasing. That spending is accelerating. And here's Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, announcing that increase yesterday.
After the end of the Cold War, there was a long decline in defense spending across European allies and Canada. 2015 was the first after many years when we saw a small increase in defense spending. And you can see that from the slide. And our estimates for 2016 show a further increase. These are only estimates, but they are encouraging. The annual real change stands at around 1.5%, an increase of over $3 billion. 20 allies plan to spend more on defense in real terms this year. So this is real progress. After many years of going in the wrong direction, we are starting to go into the right direction.
So 20 nations are spending more, an increase of $3 billion. He did go on to say that NATO needs to do more, but this is an important turning point. And as we've talked about before, the closer you get to Russia, the more pronounced this increase in defense spending is. And on that subject, Deutsche Welle had an article that I thought was really fascinating that they published yesterday related to this about Poland. Now, after Russia invaded Ukraine, as many of you remember, it wasn't the Ukrainian army that ended up taking the lead in the fight against Russia. It was militia groups. Groups often that were recruited outside of the army. The government ended up funding and sponsoring those. And we've also talked on KPCG and over the Trumpet Hour, Andrew Miller has discussed this recently about the rise of militia groups within the United States. While fear of Russia is fueling the rise of militia groups in Poland, people are arming themselves and they're joining these paramilitary groups. And in response to this, Poland is going down the same route as Ukraine. They're actively arming these militia. They're encouraging them. They're training them to fight alongside the regular armed forces. And Deutsche Welle, this Deutsche Welle article, it talks about preppers, as it calls them in Poland. These are people who prepare, and often the whole family gets involved in preparing for war, for practicing survival. Given the number of times Poland has been invaded and conquered in history, that's not unreasonable. This article says that there are 50,000 preppers and there are 35,000 members of militia groups. And this article writes they pay for their own uniform, weapons and military exercises. Just recently, a rifle association in Gdansk earned enough money in a crowdfunding campaign to buy a machine gun. So people are willing to go out and spend their own money on uniforms, on weapons, on training, on getting prepared to fight. And this article writes, the government in Warsaw would like to benefit from this patriotic spirit. After all, there are thousands of men who could raise a volunteer army, quote, in an emergency. And they talk about how the Polish defense minister, he actually took part in a recent paramilitary congress, a meeting of these different militia groups. He was there. He scrutinized around 1,000 students of what are called uniform classes. And he gave a speech saying that these were the future of the Polish army. And this article talks about how 300 schools in Poland offer these uniform classes. These classes teach things like military training. They do sports. They cover history and really try to instill a sense of patriotism. And so, and 300 schools around the country. These aren't military schools. They're just your standard ordinary school. You can go to school and you can basically be trained to fight, trained to be in the army. But this is outside the standard armed forces. And presumably with the name uniform classes, you would wear like a military uniform, get all of this military type training. And the youth minister, he has encouraged this movement as well. The fatherland has been waiting for you, he said. And he said on public television, security is now in and Warsaw intends to support this trend. And so they're making some reforms to their defense department in Poland. And soon registered volunteers of these militia groups, they'll be eligible to receive the equivalent of 120 euros a month. So that's, I haven't looked it up exactly, that's probably somewhere around $150 US a month for joining one of these militia movements. And they quoted one of these preppers, one of the members of these movements, saying, "We have never seen anything like this." And they said that he was excited about the idea hatched by the nationalist conservative government. And it signals to people, and this article says, it signals to people that it pays to be patriotic and prepared to fight. So, I mean, this is a major development. You've got the defense minister taking part in meeting these paramilitary groups. These militia groups, they're even taking part in NATO exercises now. We've talked about Operation Anaconda and some of our trumpet hour programs, the largest war games in Poland since the end of the Cold War. There'll be around 500 members of these militia groups that will be taking part in Anaconda. They'll be training alongside NATO forces from around the world, from across Europe and the US. And in a few months, they're going to start training alongside the Polish army. As I said, that's a big development. Since the Middle Ages, governments have generally tried to be the only power in their country that can field an army. These kind of militia groups were a major part of established democratic society kind of losing control in the 1930s, the rise of paramilitary groups. Now, I don't think that's happening in Poland, but encouraging these militia groups, it is a calculated risk. But Poland, they're encouraging this, they're taking this risk, and it shows a level of genuine fear of Russia there. But you can see why they're encouraging this kind of thing. This is a low-budget way that they can really increase their military power and their power to defend themselves. They don't have to pay these militia groups a salary. They can spend a fraction of what they would have to spend if they were recruiting these guys into the regular army. So they can increase their power without spending a ton more money. And it'll be interesting to see if this catches on. And you could really see how if fear increases, this kind of idea could spread all across Europe. And it does, as I said, it allows Poland to expand its military power quickly and in a very low-cost way. And we know fear in Europe will rise. Fear of Russia, fear of terrorism. And going back to the Jens Stoltenberg meeting yesterday, that press conference, he was talking about how the alliance will position a battalion in each of the Baltic states and to Poland in 6 to 9 month rotations. That's around 1,000 troops. And out of these four battalions, the US will lead one, the UK will lead one, and Germany will lead one. They haven't got a lead nation for the 4th Battalion. Canada is considering that. So, and this is a small beginning for Europe and for NATO doing more to work together and to counter Russia. But it's interesting, in the small beginning of this NATO response, you've got Germany right up there with the UK and with the US playing a key role in this. And so they're going to be one of the main framework nations, and then each of these nations will be bolstered by smaller contributions to make these into multinational forces. So France, for example, is going to contribute a company that's around 150 soldiers to one of these battalions. And so you're seeing Germany now getting more involved in the defense of Poland and of the Baltic states. And Time magazine, they had a great article just over the weekend really showing how this tension with Russia is only going to increase in the medium term, over the next few years. Russia, they're already increasing tensions now. They've said, as a result of the US missile shield that officially went operational in Romania, that Romania will become a target. Their officials have said that NATO is going to increase its military and security exercises. And Time magazine, they wrote, the Russian leadership is in the middle of a major transition period during which it is implementing emergency measures to move Russia onto a war footing. In effect, state mobilization. To understand the scale of the transformation, the reason behind it, the trajectory it is likely to take, it is necessary to take a step back and see the bigger strategic picture. What we are seeing today are the result of a series of policies and reforms that were instigated initially in the wake of the Russia-Georgia War in 2008 and subsequently accelerated in the wake of the so-called Arab Spring. These policies were intended to reinvigorate the defense industry and revamp the armed forces. In 2010, the Russian leadership committed $640 billion to a decade-long transformation process that would result in recruiting 500,000 contract soldiers and ensuring that at least 70% of military equipment is modern. And then it talks about how they're procuring some high-performance, heavy equipment. They're upgrading a lot of their tanks. They've recently brought out a brand-new tank. So these are big changes from Russia, a transformation. They're in the midst of a major transition period. They're moving Russia into a war footing, state mobilization, and this is something that is just going to continue. It talked about how, this article went on to talk about just how many military exercises Russia has been holding. They also talked about how Russia is concerned about global stability. They write, these concerns are compounded by Moscow's view that the 21st century will become increasingly unstable as major powers compete for resources, particularly in Eurasia. So in Russia, they see that we're moving now into a more unstable world. And so they see a, quote, Russia that is more muscular, more alert to potential threats. So Europe, they're already getting worried about Russia. But really, we're only seeing the beginning of this military transformation from Russia, this military rise. It's just going to continue. It's just going to alarm Europe even more. And as we start to get ready to talk about Brexit, what is Britain doing in response to this, in this 21st century that will become increasingly unstable? Well, here's a headline from War is Boring last week. The British Royal Navy is down to 17 frigates and destroyers. And this article writes, the Royal Navy was quite recently one of the world's leading fleets. But that was before several rounds of deep budget cuts, the most recent in 2010, that compelled the senior service to officially decommission some of its best ships. And then it talks about how in recent months, HMS Lancaster has been parked and her crew have been assigned elsewhere because of manpower shortages. So Britain has the ship, but because of budget cuts, they don't have the sailors to man her, to run her. So they've just had to put her in dock and reassign those sailors. And then they also write about HMS Dauntless, a destroyer, I think that is, that's having big problems, and that's off for repairs now for the next 3 years. And with the Royal Navy down to only 19 before this, now 17 frigates and destroyers, the loss of these two ships, that makes a big difference. This War is Boring article writes, as recently as 1982, the United Kingdom could quickly muster no fewer than 115 warships, including two aircraft carriers carrying jet fighters, plus 23 destroyers and frigates to retake the Falkland Islands from Argentina. Today, the Navy doesn't even have jet fighters. And then they write, as part of a defence review in 2015, London vowed to stop cutting the fleet, but the damage is done. Officially, in 2016, the Royal Navy possesses 89 ships, so that's 89 down from 115. But unofficially, with Lancaster and Dauntless out of action, the fleet numbers just 87 fighting ships and auxiliaries. Roughly half the ships are in maintenance or training at any one time. Several others are committed to small standing patrols, leaving a tiny core of vessels to respond to emergencies. And really, without these two ships, now that they're gone, the UK will struggle to put together any ships at a short notice to respond to an emergency. So this one article just shows, well, it shows the dire situation of the Navy. It also shows just really a lack of thinking, a lack of priority on defence from the US, from the British government, a lack of concern, even as the world grows more dangerous. So that just short story, I think, sets us up nicely for the next segment. The world is getting more dangerous. Europe is looking to unify, to become more of a defence union in a response to a rising Russia. And meanwhile, Britain has cut its navy. Britain has relied on its navy for centuries to defend itself. It's cut it to the bone. It can barely respond to any emergencies. Britain has gone from being a major naval power now to something that's more like a joke. And that's just in such a short period of time. This has happened since the 1980s. And of course, even by the 1980s, there'd been a lot of decline. And so in this climate, Britain is now discussing Brexit. So that's about it from me. We'll have a quick break. When you come back, you'll get a sneak preview of Mr. Flurry's upcoming Trumpet Daily Radio show on Brexit. In the meantime, keep listening. And then I think Mr. Flurry should be back tomorrow for the Trumpet Daily Radio show. So tune in for that. We'll have Trumpet Hour tomorrow as well. So keep listening at KPCG here on 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, and on kpcg.fm.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week, condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com, sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. Here in Britain, everyone's talking about a historic vote coming up on June 23rd. It's a referendum on whether Britain should leave the European Union, something that was perhaps unthinkable a decade ago. But on June 23rd, it becomes a real possibility. On that date, many millions of Britons will vote to leave the European Union, and many millions on that same day will vote to stay in. We won't know the final outcome until June 24th, but on today's program, I want to remind you of something Herbert W. Armstrong said all the way back in the 1950s and 60s. As many of you know, Mr. Armstrong's signature prophecy had to do with 10 kings rising out of Europe. There will be one final resurrection of a United States of Europe, a union of 10 kings or nations, the Bible says. But will Britain be part of it? That's the question that we'll look at today. Let me begin today's program by saying just a little more about this signature prophecy of Herbert Armstrong's, one that we speak of often on this program. Bible prophecy tells us that there will be 10 European powers that will unite under a great religious power, and that this 10-nation combine will provoke yet another world war. That's what your Bible says. That's what Jesus Christ prophesied. Let's begin our study today in Daniel Chapter 2, the prophet Daniel. This is what he wrote in the second chapter about this great image that represented four world-ruling kingdoms or empires. It gives us an overview, really, of Bible prophecy this dream or this dream of this image in chapter 2, verse 40. It says, and the fourth kingdom, we'll just pick it up toward the end of the explanation, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, and as iron that breaks all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. So this is referring to the fourth of those four world-ruling empires, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, verse 41 continues, and whereas you saw the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay. And then verse 42 says, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. So as you know from other prophecies in the Bible, Daniel 7, Revelation 13, Revelation 17, there's to be seven resurrections of this Roman Empire, seven resurrections of what's been called the Holy Roman Empire, this union of church and state. And we're witnessing now the seventh and final resurrection. And the 10 toes on this image, that's the very last of it. That's talking about 10 kings. 10 kings that rule together. They're contemporaneous. We're not talking about successive rules here. Not with these 10 toes. Just to show you a couple of verses in Revelation, chapter 17, verse 12. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received power, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. That too is talking about the United States of Europe, this European superstate that's now forming. 10 toes, or as it says there in Revelation 17, 10 kings, verse 13 in chapter 17 says, these have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. They're going to give their power over to this beast. 10 heads of state, 10 groups, 10 kings. And will Britain be part of it? Well, we'll get into that in just a bit. Staying here in Daniel 2, verse 43 says, and whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. Another translation, the Revised Standard Version, it talks about the 10 coming together mixed in marriage, and yet it's a very unsteady or disparate mixture with part iron and part clay. On the one hand, it has the strength of that ancient Roman Empire, the iron-like strength, but because it's a disparate mixture, it's in many ways unstable. There's lots of differences between these 10 groups. Now, the Bible said that it would be that way. Of course, you can look at Europe, the continent today, and you can see some very stark differences. And in many ways, it makes the union weak. But it will come together for a short time. That verse we read in Revelation 17 talks about it being for 1 hour. As far as other Bible prophecies are concerned, more specifically, it says it'll last for 2 or 3 years, about 2.5 years to be precise. This power with this iron-like strength. Now already you see this loosely federated group. It has its problems. It has its differences. That's why we're seeing a referendum here coming up soon in the UK. Because of these differences, as I said, 10, 15, 20 years ago, the thought of any of these nations pulling out of it would have been unthinkable. But now look at the world today. We talk about so many of the world problems and the crises that we're facing. So much pressure now. So much pressure on nations to stand up and do what they think is right, or to split apart, or to form a union with another nation or another group. The world really is in a state of chaos and division in so many ways. Never mind the glamorous glitz that Satan likes to put upon it to make it look like it's something that it's not. Staying in this prophecy, verse 44, it says, and in the days of these kings, plural, shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So that's what this final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire leads right into. A commentary, Lang's commentary, says, while these kings are still reigning, these 10 kings, these 10 toes, while they're still reigning, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom on this earth. It leads right into the, we could call it the fifth kingdom mentioned in Daniel chapter 2, God's kingdom, with Jesus Christ as King of kings and Lord of lords, ruling from Jerusalem, ruling right here on this earth. But going back to that fourth kingdom, going back to that final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, notice what Herbert Armstrong had to say. This is back in 1955, and he said, we know how the United States of Europe will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. Prophecy shows 10 kings, 10 dictators will arise in Europe and give their power to Germany. That's from 1955. Herbert Armstrong there talking about the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. So much of this is discussed in the free booklet that we're offering to you today. He was right. It's a beautiful booklet, as you can see here. It's just packed full of prophecies that Mr. Armstrong proclaimed over the course of his 50-year ministry. And of course, speaking of prophecy and so many of these news events that we talk often about on this program, you'll want to make sure that you tune in to our radio broadcast. You talk about keeping right up to date with what's happening today. We have a live radio broadcast that goes out from the UK every single weekday afternoon, 1 o'clock here in the UK, 7 a.m. back home in the United States, where our headquarters campus is located. You can get to the radio station by going to thetrumpet.com. There's a live link that you can listen into. But so many of these prophecies that Herbert Armstrong talked about, they're being fulfilled. Leave aside the Brexit question for a moment. What about this particular quote? These nations of Europe coming together, Germany being the dominant one, and then Germany together with those other kings, setting out to dominate the world. Well, we haven't yet seen that part of it fulfilled, but that's coming. But he said this in 1956, 1955, 1956, in the 1960s. Really, he said it even before the 1950s. If you look at the United States and Britain in prophecy, that was written back in the 1930s. Then you look at some of the headlines that you see today. Last year, we drew attention to this one in Spiegel. I think it was back in March of 2015. The title of the piece, The Fourth Reich, What Some Europeans See When They Look at Germany. That's what some Europeans see when they look at Germany. They see a Reich, the Fourth Reich. And Reich just means empire. That's what they see forming. Now, historically, of course, you see empires basically are built by force, with the military, with armies, great armies. Today, of course, Germany has been working to build an empire first with this political union. Certainly, it's the economic power in Europe. And now there's calls for building its military strength. Here again, this would have been unthinkable 10, 15, 20 years ago. It would have been unthinkable. But now you have calls for a European army. You have calls for a strengthening of Germany's military, Germany's army. Like in the New York Times, this is from June 5th. It says, you know, times have changed when the Germans announce they are expanding their army for the first time in 25 years, and no one objects. Back when the Berlin Wall fell, Britain and France in particular feared the reemergence of a German colossus in Europe. I mean, that wasn't even that long ago when the Berlin Wall fell, 1989, and you had Germany, or rather you had France and you had Britain. We've pointed to a statement by Margaret Thatcher a number of times in the early 1990s, where it says, you haven't anchored Germany to Europe. You've anchored Europe to Germany. That's what's happening. I mean, the New York Times says it wasn't even that long ago where people would have been up in arms. People would have been alarmed. But now, they're encouraging Germany to build up its power, its strength, its military. They're encouraging Germany to take the lead and to dominate. Continuing in this quote, it's taken decades since the horrors of World War II, but Berlin's modern-day allies, and it seems German leaders themselves, are finally growing more comfortable with the notion that Germany's role as the European Union's de facto leader requires a military dimension. That's just the New York Times observing the facts as they are. It's the de facto leader, and now people are comfortable with it also building up its military. It needs a military dimension to this. Mr. Armstrong, when he was prophesying back in the 50s, he talked about the economic union. He talked about the political union. Of course, we're waiting to see the strong man to emerge out of Europe, prophesied in Daniel 8. But Mr. Armstrong talked about then the military union as well. All of this as it comes together. It's remarkable, really, how many of these prophecies are already being fulfilled or have been fulfilled. How could someone saying in 1955, 1956, there will be a union that comes together and Germany will be the dominant power? Imagine saying that in the 1950s. It wasn't that far removed. Back in the 1950s, Germany wasn't that far removed from being completely devastated and leveled by the bombings of the end of that war, the Second World War. And now look at where we are today. Everyone just simply acknowledges that Germany's the de facto leader, the de facto power that guides the ship. Now today it's a union of many states, many nations. It's going to be downsized, though. It's going to be whittled down to those 10. And those 10 are going to form a strong union for a short time, a short space. It's going to come together, too, with religion. A religion that the Bible refers to as Babylon, a great universal church. The map of Europe is about to be redrawn. No matter what happens on June 23rd, the map of Europe, the continent, it's about to be redrawn. And the question that we'll look at in the second segment is, will Britain be part of this downsized European superstate? We'll look at that after the break. For now, make sure you jot down the information you need to request He Was Right. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Herbert W. Armstrong made bold predictions, and they're coming true. He forecast the European Economic Community was the beginning stage of the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. He said there would be a common European currency. He knew there would be a political union, and that Germany would reunite too. He was right. But how? What we see happening in Europe today was prophesied to happen a time long ago. To order today's free material, ask for He Was Right. This publication is a look back at our roots. Our staff scoured through decades of old plain truth issues, looking for bold predictions. We then matched those prophetic statements with what actually happened, or is now happening, on the world scene. The result was amazing. The sheer number of prophetic statements made by Mr. Armstrong and his editorial team and their accuracy will astound you. This booklet is by no means exhaustive, but it does pretty well encapsulate what the plain truth was about for more than 50 years. Ask for He Was Right. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
In just a few short days, as you know, many people here in the UK will be voting on whether to stay or leave. And it's been interesting just following some of the news reports. Some who say that we should stay have argued that if we don't stay in, we could be punished economically. We could be punished by Germany. And of course, there's others that would say, well, then that's the reason we need to leave. If they're going to punish us, who are they to punish us? But just the fact that we're talking about Germany with this kind of strength and power, that's pretty amazing. You talk about things that are happening that just simply wouldn't have even been considered 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now to this question. Notice what Mr. Armstrong had to say. This is in 1956. He says, the stage is all set. The Germans are coming back from the destruction of World War II in breathtaking manner. Germany is the economic and military heart of Europe. Again, he's writing this in 1956. Probably Germany will lead and dominate the coming United States of Europe, but Britain will be no part of it. Britain will not be part of it. Now, we don't know. We're not here to say what's going to happen on June 23rd. I'm just here to echo what Herbert Armstrong said back in the 1950s. I'm just here to tell you what the Bible prophesies. It says Britain is not going to be a part of it. And the reason that we know this is because Britain is going to be an enemy of this now forming European superstate. That's what your Bible prophesies. Even history teaches us that. Look at World War II. Look at World War I. Eventually, it's going to be on the outside, looking in. And eventually, that beast that forms in Europe is going to set its sights on the UK, as it's done historically. Again, there's going to be a great war, a world war, triggered by this now forming beast power. That's what your Bible prophesies. Now, again, just for the bigger picture here, it would be easy just to zero in on June 23rd. But I want to help you appreciate the big picture of these prophecies that Mr. Armstrong talked about and that we've pulled together in this wonderful booklet. To appreciate the big picture, there's another book by Herbert Armstrong, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. If you don't have a copy of that, you want to make sure that you add that to your library as well. If you call in for this, by the way, you can also request a free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy. That book talks about all of the blessings that have come down upon the descendants of Ephraim and Manasseh, Ephraim being the British people, and Manasseh being the United States of America. All of these blessings that God bestowed upon our peoples because of promises He made to Abraham anciently, and then as the United States and Britain in prophecy brings out, we see those blessings now being taken away. We see curses being set in. Look at Great Britain, it's not so great anymore. Sadly, it's not. It's lost the empire. It was decimated of its strength and power coming out of World War II. And then since that time, and of course this has happened in the United States too, we see that it's become morally bankrupt. It's gone through a transformation, a horrible transformation, really, where there's just no strength left. It's been sapped of its strength. And the same, as I say, is happening in the United States. You can read about this in The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In fact, so many of these other writings by Herbert Armstrong, some of which are recounted here in this booklet, it was all there in the 1960s. In the Plain Truth magazine, Mr. Armstrong talking about the sickness that had set in Britain, in the United States. And then the prophecies, he was there telling us about what your Bible prophesies. Notice this. He says, Britain's entry into the European community portends a tragic situation. That's from 1973, right as Britain was entering into this economic community as it was back then. And as he says there, Britain's going to be faced with a dilemma. Whether or not to hitch to the European power or to break free from it. Of course, attaching itself to the European power, you have to also, as many have pointed out, you have to abandon so many of your own historical roots. And so this is the dilemma that Britain is facing. And of course, Mr. Armstrong was there all along saying, in the end, it's not going to work out, this union with this European superstate. Let's look over at Hosea chapter 2 and verse 8, just to get back to the bigger picture of these prophecies that are being fulfilled, of what's laid out in the United States and Britain in prophecy. It says here in verse 8, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal." God bestowed all of these blessings on the people of Britain, not because they're any better than any other nation or any other people, but because God promised it to Abraham's descendants because of Abraham's obedience, because of Abraham's righteousness. And so the British Empire that really exploded onto the scene in the 1800s, I mean, it dominated the world. It dominated that century. And it carried over into the 1900s as well. And then decline set in, and rapidly, right after World War II. But there's been a relative amount of peace in the Western nations because of the transfer of power over to the United States, Britain's brothers. And now we see the United States in the midst of a stunning decline. And so what happens next? Even as we're in the midst of a stunning decline, we see this now forming superstate in Europe. We see the King of the South on the scene in the Middle East. Radical Islam headed up by that Islamic state that we should really be concerned about. The big one, Iran. Everyone's focus right now is on the little one. But Iran is the power in the Middle East. And then you have the kings of the East forming as well in Russia and China. So many prophecies being fulfilled. So many of these prophecies, as I say, they're discussed thoroughly in detail in this booklet. But coming back to the blessings, all of the blessings that were brought upon Ephraim. And now, I mean, we haven't given God thanks. We haven't done what's needed to hold on to maintain those blessings, that prosperity, that strength, that power. And so they're being taken away. Verses 9 and 10 say, "Therefore I will return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine and in the season thereof, and I will recover my wool." In other words, the blessings are taken away. Over in chapter 4, here in Hosea, verse 1, it says, "Hear the word of the Eternal, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land." There's no truth. And so God has a controversy with our peoples, with our nations. Verse 6, it says here, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because you have rejected knowledge. I will also reject you, and you shall be no priest to me, seeing you have forgotten the law of God. I will also forget your children." That's what happens when we forget God. When we forget God's law, God forgets us. He forgets our children. Verse 7 says here, "As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory to shame." And then down in verse 17, he says, "Ephraim is joined to idols." That's the people of Britain. "Joined to idolatry. The drink is sour," it says. "They've committed whoredom continually." That's what's happened. You look at this report. This was a recent one from The Spectator. First time in recorded history, those declaring themselves to have no religion have exceeded the number of Christians in Britain. And it says here, this decline of Christianity is perhaps the biggest single change in Britain over the past century. It's just happened in the past couple of generations. What a dramatic transformation. Well, you could look at more verses in Hosea chapter 5. I just don't have the time to get into all of these. But curses are setting in. And so we know, we don't know exactly what will happen on June 23rd, but we know the direction that Britain is headed in. We know the direction for the European superstate. We know the direction that the United States is heading in. And it's time for our peoples to really wake up to what's happening in this world and to study what God has said, to study the prophecies of God. So many of them now have been fulfilled before our eyes. And so we know what's coming. We know what's going to happen one way or another, whether it's on June 23rd or some later date. Britain's going to be on the outside looking in. And this powerful Euro superstate is going to become the greatest power on earth. Make sure that you get the information you need so that you can study these prophecies for yourself and get grounded in the sure word of God. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.